Buddhist Geeks. Seriously Buddhist, seriously geeky.
Episode 117, Western Buddhism, Mega Trends and Scandals. Lama Sarah Harding joins us again, this time to discuss the major trends in Western Buddhism. We also discuss the common and unfortunate occurrence of scandals within Western Buddhist communities. This is part two of a two-part series. Buddhist Geeks is supported largely by the generosity of our listeners. If you like what we're doing, please consider making a one-time or a small recurring donation by visiting buddhadharma20.com/donate.
Buddhism in America?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So yeah, one of our favorite topics is definitely Buddhism in the West and America in particular. Yeah. And that's a course you've been teaching at Naropa for how long?
I have. Oh, not that particular class was developed about 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe. Cool. Yeah. So not that long.
And Vince, that was the course you took. And I'm wondering actually really quick what your experience was of that course, since this is something we talk so much about on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my experience is it was kind of like a sampling of the different traditions. And we read different books from different people and different traditions, and they're on various things that were related to the tradition. And then we ended up going to visit several different monasteries or centers that were in the area, and then coming back and sharing our experience there. Mm-hmm. So it was actually really cool because I hadn't had much experience with many of the things that we explored. So I felt like I got a good sense of the kind of the terrain or the landscape of American Buddhism. Yeah. But at that point, I felt like I still didn't know much, but I had a better sense of what was out there, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and one of the questions that we had for you was if you could identify a couple of the trends you see in Buddhism in America.
Yeah, I mean, we beat that idea to death.
It was one of the main things. If you could share with us some of the main trends that you see there.
Well, one thing I want to start with, because, and you probably remember me also repeating this too much, but there's a trend among, you know, what has been called kind of like white Buddhists or convert Buddhists, like us, like the three of us, that is like to think that we're it. We're what Buddhism in America is, and we kind of know it, and maybe we even, you know, are the purveyors of it. And that's one of the first things I like to get out of the way in the class, because it's certainly not true. I mean, it's a tiny minority of Buddhists now. And so that's why we go on all those field trips and all these different temples, different ethnic groups practicing Buddhism, so that we stop having that kind of elitist Buddhism, you know, which really drives me nuts. And another issue that goes with that is the belief that all Buddhists, all they do is like just meditate, and that's what the Buddha taught, just kind of, you know, meditate, and it doesn't involve any ritual, and it doesn't involve any kind of social being, you know. And so when we visit many of these temples, we see like whole families are there and everybody's making noise, and, you know, nobody's walking around whispering on their tiptoes while other people are in samadhi or something. And it's a whole different world of a living traditions. And I love to expose ourselves to that more. And then you can argue about issues of what the Buddha really said, you know. In fact, nobody knows. So some of the trends are interesting. So one trend that I always start out the class with saying, you know, how many people consider themselves Buddhist? And it's almost nobody anymore. Like, and I, you know, I'll get to know that the students, many of them may be doing hours of practice every day, and yet they won't admit that they're Buddhist. They just hate to be, you know, categorized that way. So I think that's one trend. And then another trend is they don't want to be also, they like to kind of pick and choose. It's a little bit of that marketplace Buddhism where, you know, they just don't want to sign their name up on the dotted line with any even one particular lineage. So then they're doing this or that. They do a little Zen, they do a little this, and maybe some Hinduism and yoga. And, you know, a little Kabbalah with it. And, you know, so there's a kind of a real...
Is that just a Naropa thing? I mean, it clearly is. But is it like you observe that outside of Naropa a lot?
Yeah, I used to cool. do, you know, the classes right. at Extended Studies where I would get the general community here. Although Boulder, I suppose, is not your average community. I think we know that.
Yeah, that's so, right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
I can see that trend just going to some of the Dharma centers I've been to.
Cool. Uh-huh.
Maybe a little less intense.
In the Dharma centers.
Yeah, you get some people that are really hardcore into those traditions.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, yeah, there's a eclectic,
yeah.
eclecticism.
Uh-huh.
That sounds right.
Something like that.
Go Naropa. Education.
We learn those big words. We can say hermeneutic. Salvific. But, you know, it's different. It, like you said, it's definitely different in Dharma centers as in, you know, Naropa is an academic, you know, liberal arts college. So, but I take that to be more indicative of the sort of average population of America. And then they'll say things like, well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious.
Right.
You know, so there's a big resistance on admitting that Buddhism is a religion, but yet they, you know, want to be spiritual. So that's the trend. Let's see what else is there. I don't know. What do you remember some other trends? There's quite a few. Of course,
there's a psychology piece.
Right. Yeah. Of trying to match it up, you know, with psychology or science. Those are two areas where everyone's trying to like make it fit, you know, science and Buddhism, which is so scientific, right? Wrong. Mm. It's just another romantic idea about it. Or psychology and Buddhism, of course, because those are our two areas of studying the mind. But no one really tries to match it up with other religious traditions in America, which is interesting. You know, you would think maybe that would interest someone, but it's pretty much people who have, you know, not so into other religious traditions and they come to Buddhism for something different. Mm. There's some, you know, things that I consider very good trends, much more inclusive of women, you know, than traditionally, and women teachers and male teachers, they're like, you know, pretty much on a par, which certainly isn't the case in the countries of origin. And another really interesting thing that many people have pointed out, and I think this is, you know, a crucial thing, is that Westerners want to practice Buddhism as if they were monks, but they don't want to become monks or nuns.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, so they want to remain lay people, and yet they want to get into the level of practice that normally in those countries is reserved for monastics. And that creates all those problems, and hence why they're trying to figure out how to do a long retreat without really doing a long retreat and all these issues.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of the hybridized model, and that's the one I've definitely pursued because it's like, okay, well, I have a student loans, and I'm married, and
that's right.
And it's in some sense, I literally can't leave for three. Not,
that's right.
Not to mention the 3-year thing is a Tibetan thing. It's not the case in the Theravada. They have like the 3-month rains retreat, but the monastics, of course, are practicing sometimes a lot more. Sometimes the monastics, like you said, it's not that everyone's sitting around meditating. It's actually like they're doing other things.
Yeah, milking the cows at the monastery.
Yeah, or teaching kids how to read and write and stuff like that. But there are some monastics, they're like full-time meditators or whatever.
Yes, right.
Yeah, so I can totally relate to that hybrid model being the only one that seems to even be workable if you want to really do a lot of practice and meditation practice.
It's the hybrid model, and it's also the I want it all model.
Yeah,
I want total and complete enlightenment for all sentient beings and my house and my wife and my job and my...
So you don't think that's doable, huh?
Oh, I have no idea. I hope something is doable.
Yeah.
Because we're pretty much, let's face it, we're not all going into life retreats. I mean...
Yeah.
So I certainly am betting on that there's great benefit of whatever practice in whatever way we can do. But otherwise, I'm really screwed.
Otherwise, it seems like the concern, I don't know if you share this, but the concern is, well, we could lose the depth of those original teachings and the realizations that the people had could be lost.
I think that would suck. It's a valid concern, though. But I mean, there may always be some people, if that's true, and we don't know, but if that's true, then there will still always be some people who do the
super intensive.
Yeah, the extreme Dharma, as I call it, you know, the Milarepa model of of Dharma. That's, I thought I was doing that, but I've been completely waylaid now.
You hit your stride too early.
Yeah, at like 24 or something. Yeah. Now I'm a real life Buddhist geek.
Now you're doing podcast interviews.
That's right.
What went wrong?
Yeah.
So another interesting part of that class, and this is so much part of the Buddhist landscape, mm-hmm. is how so many communities get quagmired in controversy and
it's so boring.
Scandal, yeah. And all of these things. And on the one hand, it's like, why is this happening? And on the other hand, it is happening. So how do we deal with it, or how do we understand it?
I don't know. Yeah, it really wears you down, all that stuff. But I don't think we can dismiss it, because it can be very damaging to people, you know, on a personal level, unfortunately. So, you know, you can't just sweep it under the carpet, which is what I'm wont to do because I'm so tired of it all. And I feel pretty personally immune in my own practice.
Your current situation, yeah.
And in my own, like, I want to say faith is not going to be shaken by whatever crap comes along, but some people will be, you know, and you do have to watch out for those situations. So this, you know, involves a lot of counseling. I mean, I don't know where to go with that. There's just, you know, it's human nature, and every kind of situation where you have a group of people interacting, their stuff, but I think it's aggravated greatly by people's projection onto teachers, who sometimes are perfectly happy to take that projection and then not necessarily live up to it in a way that's ethical.
Right. Where do you think those projections come from?
Oh, just our natural desire. I mean, first of all, of course, we have all the literature from the Asian traditions of Buddhism that say you should regard, you know, these people with the greatest utmost. But we actually don't have a paradigm for it in our culture, which is why I actually prefer to be an academic teacher, because, you know, we all know what that is. But this thing of a guru, you know, nobody really sure, how do we do that? Is it like a rock star? Do we shadow them and stalk them and, you know, think of that, you know.
Want to be them,
want to kiss their feet. You know, we just don't have a paradigm for what it means to be devoted to a teacher without giving up all of your intelligence, without like forsaking your whole, your intelligence and your discrimination, and at the same time be totally devoted. Since we don't have that paradigm, then we kind of do it wrong. Mm. And I mean, really, I'm not kidding, that seems like the closest thing we have is the rock star or Hollywood star phenomena. And that's tending to be what people do. And of course, that's going to be a disaster.
One thing, I'd be interested to hear what you think about this. Maybe you'd have to read the paper, but we interviewed this guy named Stuart Lax. He wrote a paper that he presented to the American Religion Academy. And it was on the institution of Zen and how the institution of Zen has actually also influenced scandal. And he spent a lot of time in Zen communities and they're falling apart. Suzuki right. Roshi, and then his successor, and then he was in another with a huge sex scandal, and he was just really disillusioned. He's like, and he started studying the sociological stuff.
I see.
And he started to notice this whole myth in Zen that's not historically accurate, that, you know, for instance, the idea that a lineage is unbroken and goes all the way back to the Buddha.
Oh, right.
Which was actually invented in China like 1,000 years later. And that was part of the Chinese importance of lineage in the Taoist tradition or whatever. And then he said it's also built into the ideas people have about the Zen master, and all these kind of poetic descriptions of the Zen master just being spontaneous and perfectly responding to the conditions. So there's all this kind of ideas about how the Zen master is perfected in some way. And then it's even built in through the vows and the chanting and through the koan practice. It's even in the koans. And that, so you get so kind of indoctrinated into this view that you actually start to buy into it at some level and start to project because of some of the institutional forms. And he said he saw intelligent and rational, discerning people going into these contexts, reading these books, and then starting to make these kind of ill-fated decisions. And I thought that was a really interesting take on it also.
Yeah. I mean, and it happens in all of them and in other situations too. I mean, it's the cult phenomena, really.
Yeah.
And we have a tendency to want it to like hand over. I mean, you want some really wise old person to know better than you do what you should do. We all kind of crave that. And then I think it's made worse by some certain multicultural or cross-cultural issues of communication and different ways of being that, you know, just add to it, and that nobody has enough distance on it, or very often, you know, they're operating under different cultural norms. We are than some of the Asian teachers, at least. And that makes it even more problematic. Too bad. And I think of all, you know, Tibetan Buddhism is the worst. Yeah, Zen too, because there's that spontaneous, like, oh yeah, Zen master can punch you in the face, and that's cool. Because really, you know, he's so enlightened. Just go ahead and take that abuse, you know. but Tibetan Buddhism has the most kind of like, what's the word, you know, all kinds of literature about it, but it's all out of context.
Right.
You know, it's out of our time period, our environment and context altogether. So we don't know what to make of it. And so it just gets messed up. And so teachers don't realize about power differentials and about all those things of taking advantage of their spiritual position as a spiritual teacher. And then, of course, the students, who shouldn't be really expected to know that ahead of time if they're young, especially in novices, you know. Mm. It should be the responsibility of the teacher. But if they don't have that kind of language and they don't have that kind of training, then coming from a different culture, then it's hard to expect it from them.
So. Yeah. And sometimes there's not, I'm guessing in the Tibetan tradition especially, there's not really any oversight from people that understand those issues either.
No, there's none.
Yeah.
None. Zero.
That's part of the reason I've seen the insight tradition have a little less the scandals. Mm-hmm. It's because it seems like now they're starting to have a community of people that have been teaching for a long time that are kind of overseeing some of these things in a more, almost like in a more it's like a business model of like.
That's right.
Yeah,
it is.
And it works a little better. And
the therapy model also there in that community, which helps, I think, because they know those issues. Well, one time a friend of mine suggested that he would lead a training for lamas, you know, on how to teach and include all those. And as you can imagine, not one signed up. I mean, it was a little bit arrogant of him to presume that. But so I don't know. That problem doesn't go away. That's why I say I'm tired of it, because each new generation of Asian teachers still has to go through it when they come to the West.
Do you see, I know you're tired of it, but do you see any way forward that you've seen examples of that we could learn from?
Oh, yeah. I mean, students from, you know, for Western students can definitely help each other and learn from those models a lot, I think, certainly. And there's certain things that are slowly shifting even among more knowledgeable and more experienced teachers who come to the West and kind of get an idea what's going on here better than some of their, you know, some of the older...
The predecessors.
Yeah. That's the word.
Score another big word for the Naropa crew.
Predecessor. Yeah. Yeah, that's just, it's just such an unfortunate side effect, you know, of the whole Dharma. And I think we talk about something called spiritual bypass, and I think you know what that is, you know, where you think everything... Of course, scandal and problems and these issues happen in any community, but when it's a spiritual community, it's worse for a number of reasons. And one of the main ones is you don't think it's going to happen. You know, you really trust, and people really put a lot of, you know, trust in that this is really holy and sacred, and these people are enlightened and realized, whether they're Western teachers or Asian teachers, you know, it doesn't matter. There's still this kind of feeling like, well, they know everything, you know. And that's one of the worst things, to just assume that you don't know where you stand.
So. Well, thank you for sharing about the three-year retreat and also Buddhism in America.
Yeah. Okay.
Really cool topics.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad we hit on that Buddhism in America stuff. That's great.
Yeah, it's a whole new field.
It's just, I think a lot of people are processing that, right? We're all in the midst of what do we think about this and what's going on? So I think that'll be helpful.
Isn't there sort of like, wait, where are we?
Right. Right.
That, totally. You know, we don't know. We're riding the crest of something and we have no idea where it's going to crash.